woman.
All day.
You are listening to International Women's Day.
Special programming on
3CR
855 AM.
That's right, it's International Women's Day. My name's Karina, and I'm going to kick off the first hour of these 24 hours of trans-inclusive programming straight from the studios of 3CR with a little look back at some of the brekkie interviews, a bit of background on International Women's Day that have covered it throughout the week, and various other bits and bobs for the next hour to kick us off on this wonderful day. So coming up from me for this fine witching hour, I suppose, we're going to go all the way back, back to 2023, special International Women's Day episode of Anarchist World this week, talking about some of the radical history of the day. Then we're going to continue into a segment as recent as Monday, on the Monday Breakfast Show, in which Rob spoke to Will Struck, also about a bit of the historicals from a trades hall perspective and some of the big figures in our International Working Women's Day history. And then we're going to finish off the hour by listening to one of my favourite breakfast segments from the past year, which is from a public forum for solidarity with the CFMEU that was hosted by the Migrant Workers Federation last October at Democritus House in Thornbury. So we're going to hear from a couple of women organising and one of the keynote speakers who's a CFMEU construction worker and delegate who tells her story. And then in that segment, it finishes up with a bit of a discussion Q&A talking about cross-union solidarity, I suppose. So I hope you enjoy it, and I hope you enjoy the rest of these 24 hours. I'm really excited about the full program we have planned for the day. We have shenanigans galore, some wonderful contributions from the regular Saturday programmers you know and love. Shows like The Dogs Program, Unitarian Half Hour, we've got Solidarity Breakfast, we've got Asia Pacific Currents, we've got special guest programming for Palestine Remembered, and much, much more. We also have some very special bespoke programs for today, including a Women in Conservation special by Marion and Hannah in the morning, a discussion that Stinky has with Steph about gender-diverse voices in the fight for a clean energy future. We also have some wonderful music from regular programmers, Anita Harris from Swing and Sway, who's giving us 2 hours of women in jazz, Hillbilly Fever late at the other end of the 24 hours from me, lots of different specials, including a concert planned from the studios of 3CR from 5 p.m. till 9 p.m. And we've got much, much more in store straight, as I said, from the wonderful studios of 3CR Community Radio, 21 Smith Street, Fitzroy. To get a full look at our program and to listen back after the fact, as we'll be popping up our audio on the webpage, you can head online to 3cr.org.au/IWD2025. Now that that's all out of the way, let's jump into our first segment. This one was presented as part of our breakfast programming this week, but actually comes from 2023, where International Women's Day fell not on a Saturday, but on a Wednesday. And instead of Joe Toscano, Anarchist World this week was hosted by Margaret Cree and Beth Matthews. So they took over his infamous 10 a.m. slot and gave listeners a little bit of a rundown on how the day started, which I think is a most appropriate way to begin our 24 hours. Hope you enjoy this little snippet from 2023.
Okay, so you're listening to the Anarchist World this week, and I'm Beth, and we're here with Margaret as well because it's International Women's Day, and this happened 7 years ago, didn't it, Margaret?
We did. We had a big call out to Ruth Martin, who is actually here as a listener subscriber and was assisting us with the show. So if you're listening, Ruth, a big hello to you.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was great 7 years ago. So we didn't imagine 7 years later we'd be here again, did we?
Yes, I think it's just landed on the day that we're doing an anarchist feminist show. So we're going to slip right now into radical dates. Here I was jumping the gun earlier, but a big welcome to all the listeners. So 3rd of March 1980 in Melbourne, in their first stoppage in 75 years, the majority of shop assistants in the central city go on strike.
And the 4th of March 1948 in Sydney, thousands demonstrate for rent control, holding up city traffic for 2 hours.
And on the 5th of March 1928 in Sydney, the militant women's group holds Australia's first International Women's Day rally. Yoo-hoo!
12th of March 1999, Melbourne protesters blockade the construction of a McDonald's outlet in a heritage site in Coburg.
How well I remember that. Didn't work, though. On the 18th of March in 1986, Canberra, members of People for Public Housing occupy the yet-to-be-opened new Parliament House.
23rd of March 1997, in Melbourne, a protest by the People for Public Housing prevents an auction of public properties in Richmond.
And those dates we've just talked about were provided by various IWW calendars and the 2016 How to Create Trouble and Influence People diary. Fortunately, that hasn't come out for a while. So just to remind you, everybody, that the theme today is March 8th, International Working Women's Day. People often forget the working women part of this theme. So Working Women's Day, hashtag March 8th, hashtag IWWD. Okay, so we're going to talk about the origins of the International Working Women's Day, which we're celebrating today on March the 8th. International Working Women's Day was originally called the International Working Women's Day, and it's celebrated on March 8 every year. In different regions, the focus of the celebrations range from general celebration of respect, appreciation and love towards women for their economic, political and social achievements. An effect of Women's Day was the 1975 Icelandic women's strike, which paved the way for the first president in the world, Vigdis Finnbogadottir. That was some surname that I think I hope it was right. In some regions, the day lost its political favour and became simply an occasion for people to express their love for women in a way somewhat similar to a mixture of Mother's Day and Valentine's Day. In other regions, however, the political and human rights theme designated by the United Nations runs strong political and social awareness of the struggles of women worldwide and are brought out and examined in a hopeful manner. Some people celebrate the day by wearing purple ribbons. The earliest celebration was held as a political event in 1909 in the New York City. Declared a national holiday in the Soviet Union in 1917, it spread to nearby countries that is now celebrated in many Eastern countries. And I'm just, that was the end of that article, but just to say that there'll be assemblies of women in the street and in indoor events around the world.
And the same is still true today. You're on 3CR 855 AM, digital and streaming online at 3cr.org.au or the Community Radio Plus app. This is International Women's Day. Next up, we'll be listening to an interview from Monday Breakfast, in which presenter Rob talks to Will Struck from Trades Hall Women a little bit more in depth about some of the working women's history to do with the day. And don't forget, before we dip into this next segment, that here at 3CR, International Women's Day and every day is trans-inclusive. Poo-poo on the turfs.
Women on the Line, a radical intersectional current affairs program.
Making space for the voices of women and gender-diverse people.
Featuring in-depth conversations with guests from so-called Australia and beyond.
Ultimately, we're looking to care for country, to continue our culture, to continue our ceremonies, so that our children have a strong sense of self and belonging.
Just because our marginalization intersect where we're both disabled. It doesn't change your white privilege. It doesn't change your straight privilege. It doesn't change your able-bodied privilege.
Sex work, the word itself, has been such a word with a lot of stigma. However, we cannot ignore that there are women out there who are making their livelihood out of this job.
Listen every Monday morning at 8:30 on 3CR Community Radio 855 AM or stream live on 3cr.org.au.
Love podcasts? We've got you. Find Women on the Line via the Community Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Women on the Line, we're about
feminisms in their multitudes,
First Nations sovereignty,
land back,
trans liberation, poo-poo on the turfs,
abolition,
anti-racism,
sex worker rights,
South liberation,
disability justice,
anti-imperialism,
decolonisation,
an end to borders,
workers' justice,
and so much more.
Women on the Line, broadcasting on the 3CR airwaves since 1986.
Now I will be speaking with Will Strack, Assistant Secretary at the Victorian Trades Hall Council, about International Working Women's Day, the legacy of Zelda Diaprano and Helen Robinson, and how capitalism has watered down the motives behind International Working Women's Day. Good morning, Will.
Good morning.
Can you maybe start off by talking to us about, I guess, the state of union membership among females across the continent?
Well, in Australia, the average trade union member is actually a woman in her kind of 30s and 40s working in the caring sector. So these days, women actually make up the majority of trade union membership. So, and the other thing that's quite exciting is that while over the course of, you know, a little while now, union membership has been slowly declining, we've recently had an uptick, particularly among young people. So we're feeling pretty optimistic at this moment. It hasn't been great for a while, but these days we're feeling a bit more optimistic.
Yeah, that's very good. And of course, yeah, we need to keep pushing to grow those numbers even more, right?
That's exactly right, because we know that the average at a workplace that's unionised, workers earn more and they're safer. So we know that unionised workplaces are better workplaces.
Exactly. I saw also, this sort of digresses away from the interview questions that I have, Will, apologies, but I just wanted to, like, I saw something on, I think someone sent it to me on TikTok the other day about, like, If you want to be rich, the best way is to join a union and support socialism because you're more likely to become a millionaire.
I haven't seen that. I do know all of the statistics and all of the research tells us that where a workplace is unionised and the workers come together, I mean, that's ultimately what union is, right? Union is workers coming together and with an understanding that they will do better. They'll get better outcomes if they operate together rather than as individuals. They have more power when they operate together rather than as individuals. So that's what we know, right? And all of the evidence backs that and says that workplaces where people join their union and are active in the union, not just join their union, but are actually kind of engaged and working together, are workplaces where there are fewer injuries, where the injuries are less catastrophic, and where, you know, people get better pay and conditions.
And what an important note that is. Of course, International Women's Day was born out of the labour movement in the early 20th century. Clara Zetkin was, of course, a communist, after all, who initially pushed for the, like, formal celebration of the International Women's Day that we know today. Where does the addition of the emphasis of the working woman come into the International Women's Day celebrations?
Well, of course, because it was trade unions and because the initial push for this came from the labour movement. Originally, it was International Working Women's Day. It was a protest action which was about women getting equal treatment in the workplace, and that's what you know, Clara and others were pushing for at the time, and the labour movement picked that up. And at the time, the options for working women were limited. So the kind of work that women could do was limited. And there was also at that time a huge push around, because women were doing predominantly sweated labour in manufacturing, like clothing, the clothing industry. And there were at that time also lots of terrible working conditions. The push also came from the fact that work was very dangerous for women. So it was all about women asserting their right to work and asserting their right to be treated fairly at work, and to be paid properly. And, you know, the suffrage movement was in there as well, the right to vote at that time. But the drive was really about women having economic independence.
When did people in Australia start to celebrate?
Well, it started to be, you know, there's both the informal and then the formal, right? So almost immediately that concept spread to other European countries, and it did come to Australia. The first official, we're actually, this year is the 50th anniversary of the first official International Women's Day march. So that was in Melbourne. And so it got picked up in other places all around the world. There were unofficial marches here relatively early, but the kind of a first officially nominated International Women's Day march was 50 years ago this year.
Wow.
Yeah.
So let's maybe move to talk about Zelda Diaprano and Helen Robertson's stories. Can you tell our listeners about these two amazing women?
Well, Helen Robertson is the first. She's one of our kind of trade union legends here in Victoria. Helen Robertson worked in the clothing industry. In the 1890s, she actually was instrumental in calling one of the first, I think it was actually the first major strike in Melbourne, which was in the clothing trades. It was predominantly women, lots of migrant women. And the bosses at that time proposed cutting the pay, so they worked on a piece rate. They got paid per garment that they made, and the bosses at the time proposed cutting the rate of that they were paying the women for what the work that they were doing. And essentially it would have been, I mean, it was already an incredibly low rate of pay, and it would have pushed them like way below the poverty line. And so those women got the guts up. They all came together. Helen and a couple of other women, but Helen was instrumental in driving it, went around to all the factories. They talked to the women there, and they called a meeting of the women factory workers. They all came together at Trades Hall, and they voted in 1892 to create the first ever women's union in Australia. So they had the Tailoresses Association, and then the following year they began to take strike action when the bosses refused to meet their demands. They took strike action. And like one after the other, the factories all started to take action. And as a result of that, the bosses didn't cut their pay. In fact, they got better pay and conditions. And as importantly, the action by those women actually led to the implementation of changes and regulations around all factory work, so that factory work was made safer. So Helen is an absolute legend, and she was also the first woman ever elected to the Victorian Trades Hall Council executive, so that's fantastic. And then Zelda Diaprano is an activist. So she was active in the 1970s, and at that time there was this kind of big push around women's equal pay, and the trade union movement was running a case for the so the meat workers were the ones leading it, but the trade union movement broadly was behind a case for women's equal pay. And Zelda went down and listened to that at the tribunal, Zelda and a few of her comrades, and she was furious because it was all these men arguing about whether women should or shouldn't be treated equally in the workplace in front of a tribunal made up of only men. So it was all these men deciding what was going to happen to women workers. So she was really angry about that. When the decision was handed down, it meant that only about a kind of 20% of women workers were going to benefit. So it was a decision that women should get paid equally for doing exactly the same work. And because we have back then and continue to have a highly gender segregated workforce, it meant that only a small proportion of women were actually going to benefit. And so Zelda went out and she got a chain and she chained herself to the Commonwealth Arbitration Building in protest of that. She got cut, you know, the police came with the cutting things and cut her off and basically said, why are you here? And she talked about that. And they said, you're not going to make any difference. And she said, today there's only me, tomorrow there will be more. And she was absolutely right, because a few weeks later she was joined by other women, they chained themselves to other buildings, and they basically began an activist movement which was about women getting treated equally. And she and those women also organised, for instance, the first pro-choice rally in Melbourne as well. So they were active in a whole lot of places and spaces for women, but particularly working women.
Wow, that's some amazing history. I went to the Workers' Museum at Trades Hall recently, and there's this really beautiful exhibit on Zelda. I'm thinking particularly about the little documentary video that they made of Zelda's story, and it's just amazing to see her reflect on her life of union organizing, right? Especially when she's leading a rally. I'm not sure what rally it's for, but she's just noting how, you know, as you said, when she was first going to these union meetings, she was one, the only woman or one of few, right? And then, you know, decades later, there's so much more union membership.
Oh, so the rally you're talking about, I was at that rally. So
wow.
I was part of the ASU, the Australian Services Union, in 2007 started a campaign around improving the wages and conditions for women in the not-for-profit community sector. So that was more than 80% women. Back then, the workers, a full-time qualified worker was earning $20,000 less than the average Australian wage. And that's because a lot of that care work done by women is undervalued. And so we started a campaign. So the members of that union started a campaign, and we supported them around the actions and driving all of that. Zelda, we got involved in that campaign and came along to some of the rallies for that, and was incredibly inspirational for those women, because, of course, when she did that, chaining herself to a building, to the Commonwealth Arbitration Building, that was she acknowledged and recognised the fact that women predominantly do care work, and as a result they weren't going to benefit from that decision, which was about saying men and women who do exactly the same work get paid the same. So, you know, women weren't in a lot of those industries dominated by men. They were doing care work. So it was fantastic that she could come and be part of a campaign which was specifically aimed at addressing the very problem that she had protested about all those years ago.
That would have been extremely emotional. I know that at least even when I was standing at the Workers' Museum a few weeks ago, it was emotional just to watch the video, a very short video of that.
Yeah.
I'll just remind listeners that I'm now speaking with Will Strack, who is Assistant Secretary at the Victorian Trades Hall Council, and we're speaking about International Working Women's Day, as well as the legacy of both Zelda Duprano and Helen Robertson. So yeah, let's talk about their legacies. Obviously, you mentioned before, union membership among women has grown. What else would you say sort of the legacy of these two women's organising?
Oh, I think they're incredibly inspirational. And one of the things we always, so at the hall we have an award that goes to, we call it the Zelda Duprano Award, and it goes to a woman or group of women who have engaged in direct action to improve the lives of working women, because we think that's the critical thing, right, is that it's really important that we remember a legacy of activism, that, it, you know, these days there are lots of different ways to get active, but one of them is to take to the streets. One of them is to chain yourself to buildings. One of them is that kind of that action that disrupts and stands in defiance of this idea that we have to be nice, you know, nice women don't deliver great outcomes. So, of course, you've got to always be kind and respectful and all that kind of stuff, but disruption is a core part of how we make change. And so the great thing about both Helen and Zelda's stories is that it is about disruption.
Yeah, absolutely. Just with the award for direct action, how do you sort of navigate choosing someone in, I guess, a state of expanding, like, punishment? I'm thinking about, the right to protest is under attack. Like, how do you manage choosing someone and navigating, I guess, the very real consequences that are expanding?
Well, the thing is, women, even though the law has increasingly tried to stop direct action, women have always continued to take either, for instance, unprotected industrial action, and women have taken to the streets. So we haven't, in the last few years, because we normally hand it out at our Labor Day dinner, and we haven't done one of those because, COVID came along and there have been various issues along the way. But it's always possible to find a woman or women who have taken some action. So a few years ago, for example, there were the women, the migrant worker farm workers who took action because they were being sexually harassed, extreme sexual harassment. And standing up, that's incredibly militant for those women to stand up against their employer, because so much of their visas, everything was dependent on them having, that visa that meant they could stay here. And despite that, those women put their hand up and said, this is not right. The way we are being treated is not right and it's not safe. And so they basically put everything on the line, right, to stand up for that in union with the United Workers Union. So that kind of action is, in my view, that's incredibly militant action, is even just to put their hands up and go and report something to authorities in circumstances where so much of everything is dependent on them being compliant.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good way of navigating that, I think. I was at a vigil for sex workers late last year, I believe. And I also felt very inspired by the militant people who were speaking out despite, all of the very real consequences that are leveled against these women and these trans and gender non-conforming people, against the violence that they're facing in their workplaces.
Yeah, I think that the kind of the inspiring thing to draw from all of that is that you can try and repress protest, but where there is injustice, people will rise up.
Mm. Let's move on to, I just wanted to ask you, Will, about the watering down of International Women's Day. Do you think that, I'm thinking specifically, I've been speaking to my partner about International Women's Day and what it means to her, and she was sort of talking about International Women's Day brunches or whatever that she's been to at workplaces who will, have a brunch for International Women's Day and, of course, preach their commitment to equality. But at least in my partner's experience, she's talking about how she's the one organizing it. She's the one supplying, buying the food and then cleaning up after the fact. And then after the lunch is over, it's okay, we've spoken about our commitment to equality for another year. Let's not speak about it again until March 8th the next year,
Yeah, I think what's happened, it's that classic neoliberal concept of women's empowerment being about individual women rising up inside the system that we have now. And so that's where the corporates, have come in with this notion of individual empowerment. So we're about individually empowering women to step up inside the system, rather than and any issue that you have with the way that you're being treated or dealt with, that's about you as an individual stepping up around that, rather than the idea that actually what this is about is about lifting all women up, right? Mm-hmm. So, and it's not about protest, therefore, it's about girl boss power kind of concepts of feminism where, and so from our perspective, we say, no, it's actually, it was and remains a day where we're about stepping up together collectively. We rise together. You know, the Victorian Trades Hall Council has a statement of solidarity. And one of the parts of that that I love about that is this concept of our diversity is our strength, our solidarity is our power, we rise together. And so that's what we say. It's not about how each of us individually rises inside a system, because effectively, from my perspective and from our perspective, what we would say is women who think about it that way, that's about how, in a sense, they become part of the patriarchy. They become part of the system that is broadly oppressing women. Whereas what we want is a system that actually gets dismantled. We dismantle some of these concepts, and that's good for everyone. It's good for women if we can live in a world where everyone can reach their full potential, regardless of gender. That is actually good for women, but it's actually good for everyone because the patriarchy is harming everyone. Concepts, for instance, gendered concepts and gendered roles and ways of looking and behaving actually don't benefit anyone because they hold everyone inside really narrow concepts. So, and we're much better if everyone can just be who they are. So we say, let's work together to dismantle the structures and systems that are actually hurting all of us. And for us, we say, they're hurting women, particularly in, you know, in terms of trade unions. Women at work are not they're not rising in the way that they should. They're not getting the experience of work in the way that they should because they remain all these barriers and they're systemic things that we need to dismantle.
Thank you so much for waking up early to speak to us, Will.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Thank you. And that was Will Strack, Assistant Secretary at the Victorian Trades Hall Council. And we were speaking about the International Working Women's Day, the legacy of Zelda Duprano and Helen Robertson, as well as capitalism's watering down of the motives behind International Women's Day, which was born out of the labour movements in the early 20th century. Stay tuned to 3CR this Saturday, the 8th of March, aka International Women's Day, for a 24-hour broadcast.
And tuned, it seems you did indeed stay. We were just listening back to an interview from the wonderful Rob on Monday Breakfast. That was this Monday. Just in case you weren't already aware, you're tuned either to 855 AM, listening to 3CR Digital, or streaming online at 3cr.org.au or on the Community Radio Plus app. Or you might be a future listener that's listening to us on the website at 3cr.org.au/IWD2025. If you're not in the future, you can go there to see what we've got coming up on this special day.
This is Irene Bolger, former Secretary of the Nurses Federation in Victoria. Throughout the nurses dispute in 1986 and the waterfront dispute in 1998, 3CR was always there broadcasting the voices of workers in struggle.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio and we're broadcasting live from the Baeda Chicken Strike here in Melbourne.
We've just seen all of the thousands of nurses walk through to their meeting and people from different unions showing their solidarity.
3CR, radio for the workers, by the workers, since 1976.
My name's Karina and I'm presenting some past breakfast interviews and other content to get us going on a good start this International Women's Day 2025. 3CR's trans-inclusive special broadcast that goes for 24 hours. Lucky me, I get the first one. We're going to stay on the thread of working women and listen to one of my very favourite recordings from October last year. So this is audio from the Public Forum for CFMEU Solidarity. And this was hosted by the Migrant Workers Federation, that's FILEF, and the Greek Democritus Workers League in Thornbury. So we're going to hear some opening comments from Agapi Pashos, the Secretary of the Greek Democritus Workers League, and Renata Mussolino, a longtime OH&S officer. And later on, we hear one of the keynote speakers, Sanya Markoska, who's a CFMEU construction worker and delegate, who gives her personal testimony as a Macedonian migrant and mother and her experiences participating with CFMEU women. We're going to finish up with a short little comment in the Q&A part of this session at the end, where Emily, an NTEU member, discusses cross-union solidarity and a recent motion she had passed at the time to oppose government administration of the CFMEU at the NTEU national meeting. Just to let listeners know also, this next segment, which goes for about, I want to say, 15, 16 minutes, it does contain mentions of workplace fatalities and sexual harassment in the workplace.
My name is Agapi and I'm the secretary of the Greek Democritus Workers League. Democritus was established in 1935, and since then, we're 90 next year, and since then has been active in uninterrupted political action alongside the Greek Australian Union workers, but also in solidarity with other working class organisations. A lot of our members in the 70s and 80s worked alongside the migrant workers and the trade union movement. Democritus was and remains a pioneering organisation supporting the trade union movement. We support the workers, the rights of workers around the world, the rights of immigrants, and especially the rights of the Australian Indigenous people. We are members of the Melbourne May Day Committee and the World Federation of Trade Unions. We stand in solidarity and support working class organisations, and that's why we are honoured and proud to co-host this event and any other events that working class organisations might need to do in the future.
Okay, just a couple of things. I mean, just letting you know, a lot of you will know already that next week, on the 15th of October, it will be the 54th anniversary of the collapse of the Westgate Bridge. So far, Australia's worst industrial incident, where 35 people were killed and I think 18 were injured. And I think it goes to show that a lot of incredible activists were born out of that. The CFMEU, my personal experience has been that the CFMEU has fought not only for workers' conditions, but also their wages and also safety. I know from experience that unionised sites, CFMEU sites, are safer sites. We know that disaster could have been avoided. The men, in fact, on the job had a stop work because in June of that year, a very similar bridge collapsed. A similar one had also collapsed in Germany. There were no deaths on one. In the one in Wales, I think there were 4 deaths. The men stopped work and they were convinced to go back because the engineer said, "I am here with you every day. It is safe, it is safe, it is safe." Well, it wasn't. It collapsed. And I think we learned a lot from that. And we will not forget. Next week, I think it's, is it Tuesday? Tuesday, there is going to be the annual commemoration at the bridge. Anyone is welcome. It is an incredibly moving event because we know that unions like the CFMEU will keep fighting to make sure that no more people are killed. People are killed on jobs, and every time they're killed, we know that it could have been prevented, and we know that the union will stand up for those people and stand up for their families. So that's another great reason why we need to support the CFMEU. Thank you.
Hi, brothers and sisters. My name is Sanya. I originally from Macedonia and I migrated in Australia in 2010. Initially came here to study English for a year and I never left. So some people say that I was brave, but with a small duffel bag and $400 that my grandparents gave me, like, I think I was just a bit fearless and maybe a bit reckless. I was fortunate enough to come to Brisbane where my relatives live. They provided accommodation for me and they pay for my school up front with a condition that I pay back, which I did. They were my first supporters, and since then I've been blessed to meet so many people that supported me and helped me and in one way or another. And like, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for them. Every step, every challenge, and every bit of support along, it shaped me the way I am. I learned that these challenges, I can turn them into strengths. And like, sharing this story makes me a bit emotional because I actually never told this story to people that I don't know. But it's a reminder to keep going, and because every challenge, it's a chance to grow. Before migrating to Australia, I studied mechanical engineering. But after I moved here, I decided to study civil engineering so it can help me with my residency application. After 12 challenging years, visa after visa after visa, tens of thousands of dollars. I guess who needs money for a hardest deposit, yeah? Like, I'm proud to say that I've got my Australian citizenship. Today, I stand here as a migrant construction worker, a mother, a proud CFMAU member, a union activist, and a union delegate. And I would like to share a bit about my journey in the building construction industry. And also would like to say what CFMAU means for me. So after many years working in hospitality, I decided to change careers and start working in construction. But because I wasn't a resident or an Australian citizen, I didn't have much luck getting a job as a civil engineer drafter. I was always interested in construction and all of the hands-on aspects of it. So I decided to get a job as a traffic controller, which I was really excited and proud of it. Like many starting out, I faced tough conditions. At my first job, I was paid non-union rates and quickly realized what it meant, not only lower wages, but also fewer benefits and limited support. It wasn't long before I decided to join the union. I got in touch with the CFMAU delegate on site. They became crucial support to me. And going from non-union to union was life-changing. Like, the wages doubled, the conditions improved by 100%, and the support from my delegate was like a phone call away. The construction sector, it's often seen as rigid with long working hours and demanding physical tasks. As a migrant worker and a parent, like, I had additional challenges, like around managing my work and life balance. I have no family structure here to support me, so I really needed some flexibility with my schedule to drop my son off at childcare. When I asked my employer to help me with flexibility at work so I can start a bit late, they said it's not possible, but after I spoke to the union delegate on site, they negotiated and, yeah, they let me start work a bit later so I can actually drop my son off at childcare. So I didn't have to choose between, like, my family life and my work. This experience made me realize how powerful collective action it can be, not just for securing better wages, but for creating better workplaces and seeing the workers not just as workers, but as people as well. Like, I saw the direct impact that the CFMEU has on creating like safer and fairer workplaces. When issues arose, whether it was about health and safety or pay disputes or discrimination, like the union was always there to support me and the workers. And I think that's what CFMEU does. Like, it fights for your dignity, it fights for fair pay and safe working conditions. I would also like to take a moment to thank Lisa Zenata, who is here today. She has played a major role in my life. Like, she has given me opportunities to step up and show everyone what I can do. When she first asked me last year to attend a conference in Sydney, my response was like, no, I can't do it, I have a child. Like, what do you mean I can go to a conference? But with her help and with the executive's help, I was able to attend the conference and actually take my son and Kiara with me as well. So I wouldn't be standing here if it wasn't for Lisa. Without her guidance and belief that she has in all of us, not just me. Thank you, Lisa. So I began to reflect how I can contribute to the union. So I started engaging with the CFMEU women, attending conferences and participating in various like campaigns. Being involved with the union makes me more confident and also like gives me a better understanding about trade unions. However, I'm still developing my political awareness. One of the campaigns that shaped my activism skills was End the Misuse of the NDA campaign that myself and some of the women who are already here today been working on for the last couple of years. The goal was to raise awareness of the misuse of the NDAs and introduce a new legislation that stopped bosses to silence victim survivors of sexual harassment. This wasn't just about like changing policies, but also like about changing mindsets. All of this has led me into the role to be a delegate. Recently, I've been elected to be a delegate for a company. I have a responsibility to assure I behave in a manner that is consistent with the CFMEU delegates' code of conduct. I have experienced firsthand what workers go through and know how the support from the union, how helpful the support from the union can be. And I work to ensure that workers, not just their wages, but also their conditions and their health and safety are my priority. The recent attack on the by the Labor government on the CFMEU, it's incredibly difficult to understand. How a government can literally override new legislation and overturn governing rules of registered union for over 130 years. With 270 elected officials have been removed from their positions without any rhythm or reason. Where is the natural justice of democracy? Today, I stand here as someone who actively supports the CFMEU and believe what the union stands for, because I have seen it, what it can achieve and what impact can have on people's lives. So the CFMEU, in my opinion, supports workers no matter where they're from, ensuring they have a voice and ability to live and work with dignity. Just look at me, like from like stopping traffic, I here to stop bad construction practices. I'm not 6 foot tall, I'm not covered in tattoos, I don't use offensive language. Sometimes I do, but not very often. My union always is perceived as misogynistic, bullying and harassing. I'm an example of what the typical rank and file union member looks like. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my story.
Really well. So I'm a councillor. I was at the National Council. So the NTU nationally actually have opposed the administration. And that was three solid, hard days of trying to fight with the executive. They tried for 3 days to get it not debated. They lost. Actually, the General Secretary moved a motion to not debate any of the rest of the motions for the day. They lost, and then overwhelmingly there was sort of two opposed to it, to oppose the administration. All of the arguments were exactly the same, predominantly about misogyny. So it'd be great to hear from some more CFMEU women out there as well and what we can do to help. Obviously, I spent 3 days trying to tell, you know, the most ridiculous arguments. I was having a debate the president about Rosie Batty and SETCA, totally irrelevant stuff to the legislation. But rank and file fought really hard for it. So I think it's potentially a good example that can be used. I'd be happy to talk to anyone. I mean, the motion isn't ideal. We would have liked something a bit more militant, let's say, but it was what we could get done to get wide support. So anyway.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio. This is our International Women's Day special broadcast. We do this one yearly. My name's Karina. I got the first hour, lucky me. But this whole thing, it goes for 24, so lucky you, you know? We've been listening to one of my favourite audios. This one is from a public forum for CFMEU Solidarity that was hosted by the Migrant Workers Federation last October. So we heard from a few of the panel speakers and other speakers involved, and then right at the end there we heard from Emily, who's an NTU member, about some of her work passing a motion in support of the CFMEU, who to this day continues in administration.
Three chants. We'll do a practice run first. So the first one will be when I say no way, you say to end the eight. Alright, we'll give it a crack. No way!
To end the eight!
No way!
To end the eight!
No way!
To end the eight!
Good, now let's get real cranking hot with this one, alright?
It is really great to see so many women here. Myself and Lita have been around the traps for quite some time, and there was never so many women and so many strong women that are now in amongst the CFMEU ranks.
Amazing strong women have been doing for years. Amen to that.
So I hope you've enjoyed the first hour of 3CR's 2025 International Women's Day special programming. Stay tuned for the next 23. You're going to hear all sorts of things. I gave you a rundown at the start, but if you're really very curious, you can head to 3cr.org.au/IWD2025. And if you miss out on anything special, we'll be popping audios up, you know, once they're good and ready. Till then, stay tuned to 855 AM, 3CR Digital, or streaming online. We're going to go out with a song. This is Song of Choice by Peggy Seeger. And stay tuned. Next up, we are going to have some content presented by Madhvi from Satellite Skies, taking us through important feminist readings from the Global South. So just a snippet of the veritable smorgasbord of excellent programming we have coming up for you today.
Early every year, the seeds are growing. Unseen, unheard, they lie beneath the ground. Would you know until their leaves are showing that with weeds all your garden will abound? If you close your eyes and stop your ears, hold your tongue, then how can you know? For seeds you cannot see may not be there. Seeds you cannot hear may never grow.
In January you still got the choice. You can cut the weeds before they start to bud. If you leave them to grow high, they'll silence your voice. And in December you may pay with your blood. So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth, take it slow. Let others take the lead and you bring up the rear. And later you can say you didn't know. Every day another vulture takes flight. There's another danger born every morning. In the darkness of your blindness, the beast will learn to bite. How can you fight if you can't recognize a warning? So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth, take it slow. Let others take the lead and you bring up the rear. And later you can say you didn't know. Today you may earn a living wage. Tomorrow you may be on the dole. Though there's millions going hungry, you needn't disengage. For it's them, not you, that's fallen in the hole. So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth, take it slow. Let others take the lead and you bring up the rear. And later you can say you didn't know. Today the soldiers took away one. Tomorrow they may take away two. One April they took away Greece. But surely they will never take you. So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth, take it slow. Let others take the lead and you bring up the rear. And later you can say you didn't know. It's all right for you if you run with the pack. It's all right if you agree with all they do. If fascism is slowly climbing back, it's not here yet, so what's it got to do with you? So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth, take it slow. Let others take the lead and you bring up the rear. And later you can say you didn't know. The weeds are all around us and they're growing. It will soon be too late for the night.